I didn't turn on our mic, so that might help.
Okay.
Is it Timothy or?
You can just do Tim. That's fine. Tim.
Okay.
Both of them are accurate, but Tim's simpler.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool. Now that we have the mics on, we can actually do this.
Okay.
Okay. That would be a good thing I recognize that now and not at the end.
Oh, yes.
Because usually I do phone calls, and so I have everything on or else I can't hear them. So anyway. All right. Hello, everybody. I'm Virginia Henry, and right now I'm here with Dr. Tim Rarick, who is a professor of marriage and family and child development here at BYU Idaho. He also does family advocacy work by speaking on world issues that stem from family problems at the United Nations each year, and he is also on the Board of Health and Welfare here in Idaho out in Boise. So thank you for joining me.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Our questions for you for this interview have to deal with your work on the Board of Health and Welfare mm-hmm. for the state of Idaho. So first of all, how did you get appointed? How did this come about?
So Senator Brent Hill, who's the president pro tem of the Idaho State Senate, he'd reached out to me. I don't remember if it was a phone call or email, and said, there's an opening. I should back up. There's 7 members of the board of the Department of Health and Welfare for Idaho, and each of those members represent a different area of Idaho. And the goal is to have no more than 4 of the 7 from the same political party, so that kind of brings balance to the force, to use a Star Wars term.
Yeah.
And so there was an opening on the board, and he'd asked if I would be interested. Floated it out to me. And so I asked him a bunch of questions about it. And at first I wasn't interested at all, to be honest. I just thought of one more thing I got to do. And I didn't think I didn't feel well-versed or as qualified for it as maybe others would be. So I asked him more questions and he thought I would be a good fit. And even though I didn't. So then I chewed on it a little bit more and talked to my wife about it. She was supportive, but also had some of the same questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then I talked to a colleague who had actually served in the Idaho State Legislature. He's a professor in another department on campus. And I was set on turning it down. Not that it was a guarantee. I mean, the governor and the Senate have to appoint you and approve it. But I talked to him, and he said some things that changed my mind. And so then I decided to I guess, I don't know if you say throw your hat in the ring, but to have my name put forward. Mm-hmm. And I fooled some people, and the governor appointed me about a year ago. So,
what were some of those things that your colleagues shared with you that helped change your mind?
Well, one of the main things I try to do, and many of my colleagues in my Department of Home and Family, is trying to optimize the well-being of children and the core strength of the family, marital relationships, healthy relationships, and such. And he said, and one of the main things I focus on is, you know, promoting and protecting the family unit as the fundamental unit of society, and through social science, public policy, etc. And so he helped reframe it to say, you know, Tim, this is really what you do when it comes to public health crises and other issues that are threatening children and families. And he said, I didn't know what I was doing when I was on the Idaho State Legislature, but I did it and I learned on the job. So he convinced me that I was more qualified than I thought and that I could do more good than I anticipated. I just thought it would be, I don't know. Just another thing to add to a resume, and I didn't want to do it for those reasons.
Right.
But he convinced me otherwise. So I guess in short, he gave me a little bit more confidence and articulated it in a way where I started to realize that good could be done, even if I didn't totally know what I was doing. So.
Okay. That's encouraging. Also, I mean, it's also interesting to get a little bit of insight into the people who are working in Boise on all of these boards and even in the legislature, they're just normal people.
They are.
You know, they're yeah. just figuring it out and trying to do what they think is best for yeah. the state.
Yeah, I've had the privilege of interacting with a lot of influential, affluent people from the United Nations, from D.C. and other places around the world. And I just learned that we're all just people. We all put our, we all have struggles, trials, fears, and we all have different gifts. So, a person's a person, no matter how tall or
right.
small.
Yeah. I guess, why are you so passionate about the work that you do, about defending the family as a fundamental unit of society, like you said, mm-hmm. through public policy and things like that? Why is that such a passion of yours?
Well, to be, I guess, full disclosure, I have some deeply held religious beliefs about that. But professionally, I would also say that Yuri Bronfenbrenner, who's a Russian-born American psychologist and theorist that our students have to study, he's done quite a bit of research and has a phenomenal theoretical model that's sometimes called the bioecological systems theory. Anyhow, he summarized a lot of his research and what he'd learned over the course of his career by saying the family is the most humane, the most powerful, and the most economical system known for building competence and character. And I'm passionate about it because when families break down, most of our societal problems, you can stem it back to the family breakdown.
Right.
Poverty, out-of-wedlock childbearing, suicide, addictions, physical and mental health problems, on and on and on. I'm not saying the family is the only cause of that, but it's the primary, one of the primary, if not the primary contributor to most of our social problems. And whether it's the local, state, federal, or international level, we have a tendency to want to try to solve these problems by treating the symptoms, which are important to a point, and by doing individual focused policy where we're just trying to help individual people, rather than seeing that, rather than trying to replace the family, let's try to strengthen it so people can grow up more competent and with more competence and more character. You can't get that from, let me back up a little. The competence and character you get from home cannot be abdicated or found in the educational system or through some governmental program. Those things can help, but nothing can compensate that. So I'm passionate about it because our first relationships can and should be with our family, whether that's good or bad, and we are all wired to bond and connect. And so when that disrupts, you can tie, like I said, almost every social problem we have back to family breakdown. And some of them are vicious cycles that feed off of each other. I'll just give you one quick example. Fatherless daughters tend to be more sexually active. Or if you grow up in a home, if a girl grows up in a home that has a absent father or an abusive father,
right.
More likely to be sexually active, more likely to seek unhealthy attention and relationships with men, or to shun them altogether, which, you know, either extreme. 7 times more likely to become pregnant as a teenager. And then we also know that girls who become pregnant as teenagers, those fathers of those children rarely stick around.
Mm-hmm.
So the cycle just keeps perpetuating itself. And sex education, as important as it is, and I'm a big believer in it, and that goes through the Department of Health and Welfare under their one of their divisions, it can't compensate or replace the education, the emotional, psychological, sexual, holistic education that a father can, and a mother too, but I'm just giving you the father example. So
yeah.
Anyhow, that's a long-winded way of just saying because the core strength of any nation and society rests and falls upon its families, the core strength of its families.
Yeah. So what does the Board of Health and Welfare do for families? What is their purpose here in Idaho?
Mm-hmm.
That's my question.
Well, that's a good question and one that I am fairly familiar with, but I'm still learning myself. Like I said, this is on the job learning thing. And when I first started, they gave me a binder that was incredibly thick. And then a full day of orientations where I just was fire hosed with a lot of terrific information, but it was a lot to take in. Here's a quote from the Board of Health and Welfare's website, and I think they articulate it better than I could. The Board of Health and Welfare helps guide the department to promote and protect the public health and well-being of Idaho citizens. The board is a rulemaking an advisory body that can adopt, amend, or repeal rules and standards of the department. Executive and administrative powers of the department belong solely to the director of the department, and blah, blah, blah. And then it goes into the different divisions, such as public health and family-community relationships, and or family and child community relationships. I can't remember the exact title. Medicaid, and there's a lot of things that fall under that umbrella. So that's it. I love that statement of the to promote and protect the public health and well-being of Idaho citizens. So my unique background on the board, because we come from there's some people who are public health officials, people who have maybe more of a psychiatry background. So there's a wide array of board members and expertise. But I'm hoping one of the things I can bring is that family impact lens of, if you want to promote and protect the public health and well-being of Idaho citizens, we need to promote and protect the family. And try to find a way to increase the physical and mental health within the family, because honestly, a lot of problems do stem from that. Mental and physical health problems stem from the disruption of those family ties and connections. So that's probably another long-winded answer, but hopefully it answered your question.
No, it's clearly the board is something that covers a pretty large, it has a very large umbrella of the mm-hmm. things that they focus on, like you already mentioned. Are there any things, specific things that are on the agenda for this year?
Well, they haven't. Well, as far as I know, and maybe I need to check my email more often, but we get emails in advance that says these are the things that are going to be on our agenda for the next meeting. We meet every 3 months.
Okay.
So this one happens to fall during a legislative session for Idaho. And so it's an even busier time, and so the meetings are longer. But they typically will send out in advance what the agenda is and what sort of rules or items that we need to repeal or amend or adopt and vote on. And if it's unanimous or the majority, then we tend to, of course, then that's passed. And they could be little rules and stipulations, such as there's a law, I can't remember the exact one, but emergency technicians who couldn't give a particular type of service to somebody who needed aid when they were picking them up in an ambulance, and we needed to override that or alter that to change the language so they could have a bit more autonomy to help them. And it was somewhat of a restrictive law. And so we had to hear the case for changing it, hear why it was originally articulated the way it was, and then we all vote as a board whether to keep it or to change it. But I would imagine in February we're going to have quite a few things to do. And so what we get the agenda in advance, and then they give us all the notes, which is really nice, so we can read up on it and do our homework so we can be informed voters, as it were. But it's great, because I'd rather not be shooting in the dark and just going off of intuition. And the board members that I've interacted with, which is the majority of them, maybe all of them, I really appreciate their expertise and backgrounds. They ask really challenging, insightful questions to the issues we're discussing and trying to vote upon. So,
right. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you guys or the board advise legislation to do you, is that what you do? You advise it to the legislature and the House and the Senate, or is it this is something that you reform a law that's already in place and it only goes through you guys, or how does it work?
Yeah, I don't think there's so much advising legislation. I think the legislative branch, the House and the state representatives and the Senate, they create the laws, obviously. The board, if it pertains to the Department of Health and Welfare, the board can uphold it depending on what it is. And this is where it gets kind of muddy for me, because I'm not sure where that line is drawn. But we don't advise legislation so much as we, like I said, amend, adopt, or repeal things that already exist. So, in fact, that's one of the questions I've been trying to research a little bit more, what it comes to. And I should say one more thing. We have two senators who are on maybe advisory members from the legislature
Okay.
On these issues. So maybe the other way around, where they're advising us, and we also, we may do some advising, but it's not like, okay, you need to vote for this law. We don't do any lobbying that way. I think that's outside of our jurisdiction. And yeah, so it has more, again, with it amending, adopting, and repealing things that are already there.
Okay, gotcha. Is there anything that you are really wanting to be able to talk about this at this next meeting or this year, or what are you hoping to be able to get out of it or achieve?
Well, so that's one of the things I'm trying to navigate here, is because we show up, there's the agenda, and there's things that we are being asked to vote upon and be informed about. We don't normally go there and say, okay, we need to talk about these things, and I want to change the way we're doing this or change that. It's usually brought to us rather than us bringing it up. Now, we may be able to agitate for something, but that's not at least what I've seen. I've only been to 2 or 3 board meetings, so I'm still kind of a rookie at this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we typically go in with an agenda. The agenda is given to us, and we decide how we're going to navigate that agenda and how we're going to vote and how well we're going to do our homework on those issues. But there are some topics within the Department of Health and Welfare that I'm very interested in, such as Idaho voted on a resolution, I think it was the last legislative session, making pornography a public health crisis. I'm very interested in that topic. And so I remember asking some of the divisions what has been done about that. Is there any initiative? Is there any direction on what to do? And they hadn't heard anything. So I'm interested in maybe not pushing that, but seeing if that's going to be adopted through some practical, I don't know, some practical applications through different divisions. And what are we doing to use that as a new policy or lens by which we, how we see issues. So there's issues like that. And I'm interested in poverty and mental health. But there's other ones I just don't feel as well versed on, so I have to do a lot more reading on. But some of my colleagues on the board, thankfully they have those strengths, and I can always email them and say, what do you know about this? But we are not to talk about the issues in depth or what we're going to vote upon outside of it. Otherwise it becomes I can't remember the exact name of the law, but anyhow, I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but yeah. So we don't really go in with an agenda. We have the agenda given to us. We just try to get as informed as possible.
Right.
So.
Gotcha. And what would you say is your main form of employment is being a professor here at mm-hmm. BYU Idaho. So what would you say to other people maybe who are considered experts in their field or very educated in whatever topic that they have chosen? What would you say to them about getting involved in these political events? I mean, you've been to Washington, D.C. You do speaking at the UN, and now you're now engaged in this board in Boise. So what would you say to others who the same level of expertise in an area, you know, because I'm sure nowadays people are pretty hesitant to get involved mm-hmm. in the political world, to step into that. So what would you say?
Well, the better, the more information that's good information, especially if evidence-based information and not just ideology, the better. So I would tell them, we need your expertise. And we need you to be measured about it and as objective as you can about it. I try not to approach issues from a political party. I'm not a big fan of doing it that so much. I realize why they exist, but I try to vote more on based on evidence and the practical implications, the long-term and short-term, rather than what is my party going to do. So it's really hard not to get caught up in the political hoopla and the emotion of it all. But if you have some expertise, whether it's in medicine or public health or in or any field, those things can really help society, and whether it's just your community and what you live in. So take that expertise, get informed on how the political process works. Don't be jaded by it. And I think it's one of the benefits of being an American living in the United States is that we have this constitution that the people can be so engaged in the political process. As dirty as politicians can be, they're not all dirty. As annoying and as divisive and polarizing as politics can be, it doesn't have to be for you. Don't let the system dictate how much you try to influence it. I think sticking our heads in the sand is what crafts bad policy and law, because then the people who are the loudest, regardless if they're informed or not, and oftentimes, not always, but sometimes people who are the loudest aren't very informed on evidence-based practices, and you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then things pass and we complain about it. I'm like, well, what are you complaining about? You did nothing to move the needle in informed practice direction. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I guess that's what I would say is we need people like that who are experts. Even if you're not an expert, I think you can become well-versed enough to know what's best for children, families, and society. We have the web. So stay away from the polarizing opinions of people and just try to look at the most objective information that you can. Science isn't always objective, but it's more objective than most sources.
Right.
So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we're here with Dr. Tim Rarick, and it's been so interesting to hear about what you've been doing on the Board of Health and Welfare out there in Boise. Thanks so much for answering our questions and taking the time to talk to us today and impart your perspective and some of your advice.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.